along in my automobile. My baby beside me at the wheel. I stole a kiss at the turn of a mile. My curiosity running wild. Cruising and playing the radio. With no particular place to go.
This summer, millions of Americans will be taking to the road once again on their annual vacations. More than any other place along the way, they will stop at gas stations. As you pull up to the pump this summer, see if you agree with the following statement. The gasoline station has emerged as a cultural icon central to the American psyche. The line comes from a fascinating book titled The Gas Station in America by John Jekyll and Keith Scully. Jekyll is a professor of geography and landscape architecture at the University of Illinois. Scully is the head of research and education at the Illinois Historic Preservation Agency. And Keith Scully is with us today. Welcome, Keith.
Hello.
Gas stations as cultural icons? What do you mean by that?
Well, let me wade into this a little bit by trying to define icon. It's a word that current in academic work among people concerned with popular culture. It's a word that comes down from the Greek language. Icon literally means image, and it has a religious connotation for people in the Eastern Orthodox Church, or visual representations of saints and religious activities are depicted. So how does this translate into the business of studying popular culture in America? It doesn't seem a long way from religion to this. Well, icons are three-dimensional objects or images which symbolize, just as they do for the Eastern Orthodox Church, and sum up some very important kind of concept, but a concept which has an emotional charge to it, a positive or a negative ring in the case of popular culture. And so the cultural icon that we're studying is the gasoline station, and we must ask ourselves, since it is so important and it is so ubiquitous and we're dependent upon it so much in this country, what does it mean? What can it mean besides just refueling and filling up our gas tanks and our crankcases?
My guess is that most of the listeners would probably be where I was when I opened up this book, thinking of the car or the automobile as an icon, but not the gas station. Yet you make a point that they really do relate to one another.
Well, the car, of course, is a primary one, and the gas station is important, and it's not necessarily derivative. They have some of the same kinds of meaning. If we get into this discussion of what the psychic value of this icon is, I think it has all to do, both in the case of the gas station and the American automobile, with the business of mobility. Americans are very concerned with mobility. We're concerned with social movement, which we usually connote to mean upward and better. We're also very concerned and have been throughout the time we've been on this continent with physical movement, and usually westward. Not always, but usually westward. And physical movement has for us lots of advantages, we suppose, and that things will get better if we relocate to some other place. There's always a greener pasture out there. Now, gas stations, of course, are the facilitators, at least in part, of this physical mobility. This is where you have to go to refuel. And so they have a dependence which keeps mooring us, bringing us back to them. So the gas station is something that has the chance to symbolize good or bad, and it's cut both ways. The psyche has invested great value in the sense that the gas stations are places that permit speed. They are places that permit convenience. We like literally to get in and out of these places. We want them to be something that help us to get along with our business, but we don't want them to delay us in any way. They've also had, for a lot of Americans, especially recently, a negative charge because they have connoted a wastefulness. They have connoted a sense of bad aesthetic taste, and there's been, in fact, if not a war, there's been a friction over the gas station from the very, very beginning of its inception on the landscape to render these buildings something that can be at least cohabitable with respectable neighbors and decent residential districts. So it has a positive and it has a negative, and how they have changed over time is a really critical question for historians.
As that answer suggests in your book, you really do look at gasoline stations from many different perspectives, not only the physical, social, cultural, psychological that you just mentioned, but also from the perspective of architecture, marketing, corporate influence, and so on. Let's take each of those. For example, early on in the book, you talk about conceptualizing the roadside, where gas stations, of course, are located. What is it that you want to say there?
Well, there are a number of things. The question for the historian, of course, is the nature of the roadside and how it has changed, and how the gasoline stations have helped this change to come about. The meanings are various. Of course, over time, they have been important. These gas stations have been important economic links in a vast, ever-growing consumer-oriented world. It is, after all, the place where we buy the gas and the oil that permits this movement. And it is also the place that ties us in to the capacity to consume other goods after we've discharged the obligation of taking care of the elementary refueling. It is a place of associated experiences that we've had over time, and surely almost every one of us has had this, seeking a gas station, for example, in inclement weather, in unfamiliar surrounds, perhaps traveling out of state in search of a vacation that might turn into a bad weather pattern. We go to the gas station perhaps to get some kind of orientation. What's down the road? What's a good place to stay? Where might there be a good hotel, or where might there be a good motel? Where's a good and friendly place that we can hold up for a while until the weather passes? That's the worst case scenario, but it is important that the gas station is a place that helps us to lift tension from the travail, which is, after all, at the root of the travel experience. It's a place, then, of travel information. Now, the other thing that's especially true, and I know this from traveling a great deal into the Midwest, gas stations are places of great sociability. How many times have we stopped there to feel like perhaps if we're not from the neighborhood where the gas station is located, that we've perhaps even intruded on a social exchange, if not a party atmosphere, at least a place where the neighbors get together and talk about, just about everything. Last week's rainstorm, or upcoming events politically, and maybe the city election. These are places that people get together. There's a great connectivity to the social element for these stations. Now, that's the kind of experience that most of us have, this economic, this attention and information, this travel information and sociability. But then, of course, for architects and photographers, artists, writers, gas stations have had all kinds of connotations, and that's a whole realm unto itself.
Okay, let me just pick up on one thing that you mentioned in passing there and the economics of it. Certainly marketing has had its effect on the evolution, if you want to call it that, of the gas station. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, let me just start out with the term that we use called, that John and I use in the book, called place, product, packaging. Right. We think this is very important because from about the 1920s right down to the very present minute, the oil corporations are very concerned to be visible, yes, but to be distinguishable, one corporation from another. And they have done this through a series of plays on color, form, slogans, songs. They've even been, especially in the 20s and 30s, used uniformed service personnel. And they assemble all of these elements, all of these sensory elements, into what they hope to be very memorable packages so that you can distinguish one brand from another. That's especially important strategy when you're trying to develop regional or, in many cases, a national and sometimes even international markets where combinations of shapes and colors resonate as, oh, I remember that. I bought my gas over there in Omaha last week, and you might be in Amsterdam next week, and there you are at a Dutch Shell company station or other kind of brand. These things are very important to the oil companies in setting up domains and claiming territory when they establish markets across time. Now, the gas stations have done this with great force, although they were not the originators. We can go back into the 19th century, especially after the Civil War with the advent of so much industrial production. There were a number of companies like National Cigar and United Biscuit that were doing these kinds of things. But the gas stations are something that aren't just on the grocery store shelves. They are everywhere we travel, and so there's great importance in how they have reprogrammed our thinking.
Now, one of the parts of your book I found particularly interesting because it forced me to go back and think about what I looked at as a younger man, but how the form of the gas station has changed, how the architecture has changed, and you both identify that and talk about why this came about. Let's talk about a few of those forms in the time we have left. If you want to start with the curbside and move forward, start wherever you wish.
We have a number of these that we've identified, but I think for our purposes here this morning, we can introduce the reader to the notion that there's a grouping that might be called utilitarian. That's the first in our list, but it's also the first in time. There were curbside pumps, literally pumps on the curb with no house behind them, and out from the store where the curb stood, where the pump stood, would come the service attendant who would pump gas. That was the very, very beginning. That takes us back into the early years of the 20th century. There was also at the time in some places like lumber and hardware yards, there were sheds so that the pump was accompanied with a kind of building that the attendant could get out of the rain but could also discharge what minimal obligations there were to keeping change and making records for the company. So there was the curbside and there was the shed. And that prevails, I'd say, roughly through about 1915. Of course, these are, you know, these forms continued on in some fashion. But about that time, about 1915, and then beginning really begins to rev up in the 1920s, we have buildings, yes, we have buildings, not just very simple structures, buildings which have architectural pretense to them. We have especially the house with canopy, the house with bays, and all of these three subtypes are distinguishable because the building that was served as the office was also a place that was made to look in many, many cases like the residential buildings of the neighborhood so that they would be welcome in, so that they wouldn't be architectural pariahs, so that the neighbors would want to refuel there and wouldn't say, egads, this is the kind of a thing we don't want to have in our neighborhood. So the gas, the corporations that were beginning to compete very furiously in the 20s found reason to try to welcome themselves into the neighborhood. We also had, by the 1930s, something called the oblong box, which was a derivative of modern architecture, very popular at the time. They also served the economy purposes of the of the corporate companies because they were very simple buildings, very inexpensive to build. And so they had an aesthetic on the one hand, which satisfied elite tastes at the time, but they also had some very real economic advantages. We come down in time and say into the late 1960s and 70s, where more America, so oil dependent, begins to confront the oil crisis, and we have very reduced residential kinds of structures on the lot, and so reduced, in fact, that they move back in time closer to that early shed style that was so popular, say, up to about 1915. We have what we call, what John and I call, the small box with canopy. There are a number of the oil companies that use these today. Now, the most recent and the one that is great, making great, having a great influence in the petroleum trade today is the convenience store, which has pumps out front, but it has a full array of goods for quick purchase. Mom and dad on the way home need a carton of milk, bread, smokes, which have been popular for a long time for sale in gas stations. These have caused the sale of these items, and especially their array behind extensive panels of glass, has caused the architectural element, the building element of these stations to come again and come again with force.
Given that this must be a tremendous investment in these huge operations you mentioned at the end, which I'm well aware of, are we talking something largely driven by the large corporations here?
Well, interestingly enough, some of the most influential of the developments that take place over the history of the gasoline station have begun with the independents and begun with the small companies, especially in the case of the small box and the small box with canopy. It was the small company that couldn't afford, in fact, the larger, more splendid kind of architecture that wasn't a trend setter for its high quality of building that set the pace. And when the large companies confronted the oil crisis in the 70s, they realized that one of the things they needed to do was to cut back on cost. And so away went the buildings as a major force. They reduced them in size and pretense. So no, it hasn't all been, although it's been a very important factor that the big oil companies drive this market and the way the buildings look, but the small companies and the independents have been influential too.
Okay. Well, we only have a minute left. Let me just ask you one final question here. You make a point in the book about the decline of the number of true gas stations. You mentioned 239,000 in 1969 with fewer than 100,000 today. First, what do you mean by true gas station? And then secondly, why should we care?
Well, a true gas station as we define it, and of course that's always arguable with people concerned with this matter. A true gas station, by our take, John's take and mine, is that is a gas station that lives economically primarily by its sale of gas and oil, that it doesn't sell other things to a great extent or depend for profitability upon it. That is to say, the convenience store is not a gas station as we define it. Doesn't mean it's unimportant, but I think that because, to try and clinch my earliest idea about the gas station as an icon, if the gas station tells us something deeply important about us and resonates at some emotional level for us as a people, then we have to ask, when we downsize, are we simply getting smaller? Are, on the other hand, perhaps we becoming more resourceful? What is in fact happening as these begin to disappear? How does it reflect upon us? What can we find out about ourselves?
Well, those are good questions on which to close, I guess. So we're out of time. Thank you, Keith, for being with us.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Keith Scully, co-author, along with John Jekyll, of The Gas Station in America.